I'm the doctor. These are my new best friends, Ryan, Graham and Yaz.
Hello there, welcome to episode 81 of the Target Files with season 11. We are doing the Arachnids in the UK, episode written again by Chris Tignall and directed by Sally Aplahanian. Hello, this is Alex in Exeter.
And this is Mike in Swansea. Hello.
So, we have to discuss today Arachnids in the UK. We're back in Sheffield and there's a monster and there's a sort of character I think was definitely based on Trump. I quite enjoyed it, but I've been thinking about it. I think there are a few things they could have done maybe a little bit better. What did you think of it, Mike?
I was going to put it down as a sort of 6.5, maybe 7, my lowest of the series on one watch. But I did have a feeling it might improve on a rewatch, and this is one of the first ones of this run, this series 11, where I have actually rewatched it just now. And I think it's probably added a bit more in my estimation. I've noticed a lot. There's a lot more layers to it. Really getting to grips now with things like Chibnall's humour, which I've struggled with before. I've noticed the fact he writes character pieces so well. A decent villain and a nice little twist about where your sympathy lies at the end for the real villains of the piece again. So it'd be interesting to chat about our feelings on this one, Al.
Yeah, because I have to admit, I saw your comments about it yesterday and I asked you, and I thought the same when watching it on the first watch about 3 a.m. last night. It's like, I don't know, I didn't think this works really in some way. And I watched it again this afternoon. I think it's really a clever episode because you're meant to not like the, I was going to call him Mr. Big from Sex and the City's character, but you know, you're not meant to like his sort of character at all. And he's, you know, he starts off, you know, making you slightly like him, while saying, you know, I don't like Trump, I don't want to be like him, and ends up being like Trump. So I thought that was really cleverly written. And then you've got these mammoth spiders who are, you do end up feeling quite sorry for, I thought.
Yes, that wonderful twist we can chat about towards the end, Al, but opening scene at the Celtic Manor Hotel near Cardiff, setting of Sheffield again. Yeah, Chris North's character, is it Jack Anderson or something?
Yeah, I think that's his name. He's meant to be like, you know, something like a sort of Trumpy, owns loads of hotels, media and all that sort of stuff. So he is basically Trump in a nutshell, basically. That's what. Well, I think the really clever thing, what Chris Tignall's done, is making him at the beginning going, oh, I despise Trump, I don't mention his name. So it sort of makes you feel sorry for him for about 5 seconds.
Total narcissist from the off. Yaz's mum we introduce to the excellent Shobhna Gulati, guest starring as Yaz's mum. She walks in and immediately gets fired as the general manager of this hotel that's about to open.
Yeah, it's very weird, you know, how that, you know, he sort of makes himself out to be a real villain from the start. Well, maybe sort of characterised villain, sort of villain you expect, and then looking good in a suit like he does, and, you know, sort of firing Yaz's mum immediately. But that was one of, I don't know if Yaz's family, if they're all that great. I thought she was really good, but I don't know if the rest were just meant to be there for comedy and didn't really work.
Yes, it's a stereotypical dull dad again, isn't it? You know, he must be a bit useless.
Yeah, I thought, you know, she was really good, the mum, and she gets a lot of, you know, in the tiny later, but she gets a lot of sort of, does a lot for the episode and is very good by the end. I just thought the rest of the family were a bit pointless, maybe. That's the only niggle I have about the episode, because I thought it was a really well-done, paced episode with lots of good bits for the character, you know, the friends of what we're calling Team TARDIS now. And I thought they did really well in this episode.
Yes, and Yaz's overly critical sister as well.
Yeah, she's sort of, I don't know if she, another person I don't think it worked, because she is sort of very, you know, oh, your sister, I'm very critical, I think you're not going to succeed in anything. We can see how well she will succeed, probably, and is succeeding with the help of the doctor, basically.
It does make you wonder whether it was necessary to see her dad and her sister in this episode, given that they weren't sort of as fleshed out as certainly her mum is.
Yeah, that was my main, after watching the episode for a second time, that was my main niggle, that I didn't think you needed the rest of Yaz's family. I think it would have worked a lot better if you just had the mum, basically. So that was my only niggle about the episode, really.
Yes, can I just return to Chris North's character? Very well rounded, isn't he? Very controlling. He has the idea of a scheduled bathroom break when his phone goes off. That made me laugh.
When I come back, you'll be gone. I have to have an actual bathroom break. And his poor mind at the time has to physically go into the bathroom with him. I just thought that was a lovely little bit of comedy there.
We really see his evil ways, don't we, when the shot we'd seen in the trailer of him cowering from what we thought was a spider in the trailer, it did turn out to be, but he ends up letting his assistant take the demise.
Nasty way what the assistants and his bodyguards get very eaten by the spiders, basically. And I just love that scene, which is in the sort of same bit when he's in, having his bathroom break, and the bath literally explodes. That was a really nice little special effect there.
Very reminiscent of the John Sim Master with the Toclophane back in Season 3, wasn't it, when he sort of looked back in to see the damage, and there was almost a look of being impressed on his face at the damage the spider had done.
Yeah, there's sort of little bits of, this is fantastic that, the spider has done this, basically.
Well, we saw the return of Sharon D. Clarke. We knew she was going to be a recurring character in the series as Grace. We saw the first evidence of that as she sort of ghosted into various moments, very brief moments in Graham's life. Now, do you feel it worked in that she was offering him the odd line of advice and there wasn't this sort of major conversation with them? It was basically a manifestation of Graham's memories.
Yeah, I did think that worked a lot, actually, because it showed more of how, he's part of Graham now. And I think it's when he's at the house, it makes him actually, forced into and becoming part of the TARDIS team at the end base when we get to the end. I think just having her there as a ghost or, and sort of making her still part of him, really, I think did work.
Is it necessarily that she has gone? Is there some sort of alien influence in her coming back? We've seen a character like Rose ghosting in and out of the Doctor's life in the past. Do you think something more could be up?
Yeah, well, I'd never say never with sort of characters like that, because they were sort of so, just made so important in the first episode, and it's important, all the way through the strands with Graham and Ryan, how they remember her and all that. So I would never say never what they might bring her back by the end of the season somehow.
In terms of threats in the episode, Al, a lot of people have criticised over the years the way spiders are done in CGI. I thought this was a pretty darn good effort, and speaking of CGI, we saw the Time Vortex in all its new glory in the beginning with various wormholes coming off it. Were you excited by that concept?
Yeah, I really like that sort of the vortex and the way it sort of spiraled and sort of way the That was looked how you sort of imagined it quite a few years back. And I think that is one of the best shots of the vortex and how, the TARDIS can't really cope with it and is trying and sort of, I think that added a nice trick. Yeah, the spiders look good, but I don't know what it is. I never seem to find CGI spiders that scary. I'm not a big fan of spiders. I just didn't find them scary. But I expect if you're a young kid, you'd find them quite scary. There's a lot of bits when they were quite scary.
I just, with a lot of CGI nowadays, I admire the detail they go into when, you have the idea of the webs being spun and sort of people variously tied up at various times.
Yeah, the actual spider webs and cobwebs looked really good and stunning. They were quite scary, I admit. But it's just the spiders, I don't know if it's just me, weren't the greatest on the scare from. I think that's because I'm just used to CGI spiders since, the Lord of the Rings films and that, where they were quite scary. As, Shelob the Great in the Lord of the Rings film was very scary. Yeah, I think if you were a child, that would give you a couple of nightmares for a couple of days.
Two various influences I put down, Al, were the idea of the sort of mutations from the Pertwee story, The Green Death, and the movie Arachnophobia with the spiders in, although they're just regular-sized spiders in that movie, in the suburban setting.
Yeah, I think, definitely the reference of the, the Green Death and thing, the mutations and sort of things like that. And that film is horrible. That film I haven't seen for ages, but it is horrible, Arachnophobia. If you don't like spiders, don't go near it, because it's, I think they're quite funny, because they look like little rubber spiders, really, in that. But
not a great film. I did a rewatch after, probably 20.
And did you watch it again? Because it is terrible. The film is terrible. I wasn't going to say anything against it, but it is terrible, Arachnophobia. It's quite funny, I find.
Well, I saw it when it came out in the cinema, must have been summer 1990, age 13, and I didn't watch it again until probably about 2 years ago on TV, and as with anything he's in, John Goodman semi-saves the film, but everything else about it is just appalling.
I know, you can tell, the really bad thing about it is you can tell the spiders are rubber spiders, there is no scariness. I think back then I was scared by it, but I've watched it again recently, and it's just hilarious.
But that was, you know, that was the 90s for you, before Mr. Spielberg introduced us to mega CGI in Jurassic Park.
Oh, yeah, yeah, definitely. That is scary. I find that bit still scary. The CGI, the first sort of CGI in Jurassic Park is very good still to this day, I think. But the spiders in this, yeah, aren't the greatest. I don't know, it just didn't really give it to me. I thought the mother spider was quite scary. I think the bigger ones actually had a bit more about them, but the tinier ones weren't great. But there was that one really, I think the one really good scary thing is when Graham and Ryan were in that ballroom and they forgot to look up, and that nearly had them. I thought that was quite scary.
Yes, and going into a good bit of biological detail with Climax Al, as we said earlier, this major threat of the spiders really turns on its head, you know, to sympathy for them in terms of the queen spider growing too big to be able to breathe, but then Chris Noth shows he's really the bad guy by finishing it off with a gun.
Yeah, that really does that one bit there, sort of spins you around, because most of the episode you're thinking, oh, the spiders are the horrible thing, and you know, Chris Noth is just being a little typical American these days, unfortunately, and then you see that the spider's been so badly mutated it can't breathe and it's going to die, and you do feel sorry for it. I was feeling sorry for it by then, and great Chris Noth comes in and shoots it. That's the best way of dealing with it, is sort of typical Trumpy American outlook.
Yes, you know, what's his line there? What's the matter with you people? Why don't you shoot anything?
I know. It's like thinking, well, that's exactly, unfortunately, how not all America, most of America feels these days, unfortunately.
Spoke a little bit last week, you had certain issues with some of the incidental music. I thought it was very much like Broadchurch again this week within the suburban setting. A lot of electro synth strings put in alongside some real orchestral synth, some real orchestral strings.
Yeah, I think I'm just getting used to it more in actually being there and having a point. So I thought it was actually quite well done this week. And, you know, I'm very clever of using actual music from Stormzy to, you know, get, you know, obviously people who are the, I was going to say younger generation, because I'm not that young these days, but, you know, actually they'd know it and it'd be a good sort of connection. So I thought that was very clever. The actual music from Sagan, again, it's really getting better, I think, every week. There's more sort of beauty to it, and sort of when they come back and they're on that sort of see the flats for the first time and recognise that they actually weren't that far away from each other. There was some beautiful bits there, I thought.
And I've got to say, Al, this week, the way it was filmed, possibly via Sally Abrahamian's direction as well, the whole pace of going into the TARDIS, both at the beginning and at the end, and I thought the lighting was much more improved this week. You know, the use of CGI with the new Time Vortex going into the TARDIS in flight, and just the lighting when the three entered the TARDIS and told the Doctor they wanted to travel with her at the end, just absolutely top-notch.
Yeah, I thought so as well, because it was just the right balance, because with that new TARDIS, I think you sometimes get too much lightness off the crystals, basically, now, and I think that gives too much brightness, where I think he's just had it lit beautifully with it being semi-dark, but not completely dark, and sort of still getting that sort of ethereal church feel of the new sort of concept, where I think it was much better.
I was going to say, Al, when they entered the TARDIS, Ryan, Graham and Yaz at the end, I think it was quite a low shot with the three of them sort of in profile, and it almost looked like three people sort of looking out onto a vast sea with the crystals in the background. It was an absolutely beautiful shot.
It is. It's a really nice shot of, you know, this is a mammoth room, basically. You know, it can be really big. And you know, it didn't feel big. It felt more concentrated on their three characters saying, you know, we want to join you, basically. And I think the way it was lit and shot was much better than last week's.
Yeah, very much reminded of the low shots of the TV movie, you know, the cloister room in the McGann TARDIS.
Oh, yeah, definitely think about it. And that's I like the cloister. The cloister room looks beautiful in that Paul McGann film, including the sort of period it's from. That does look beautiful in that, and I like it. It's one of my favourite TARDISes, that one from the Paul McGann film, I think, because it just looks stunningly beautiful. Like, I think what this one is, even when it's lit right, because sometimes it can be just too bright, and I think this week it was just right. You know, you had the darkness, you had the light bits there. I think it worked.
The balance for me was much better, I think, in the lighting.
Yeah, I think so. I think the balance was much better because, as I say, you know, with all that glass and crystal, you're going to get refraction, unfortunately, and if it's too bright, it sort of takes away the sort of, you know, sort of gothicness of it.
Just one last return I want to say to Chris Noth's character. Now, he's a little bit like Crasco last week in the Rosa episode. He's not quite a fully formed villain. Do you feel he'll return?
I don't think he will, unfortunately. I think he should do, because, you know, he wasn't completely manic sort of villain. He was sort of very subtle, except to the last bit where he shoots the spider and it sort of turns into full villainy there. But I don't know, because I thought Crasco had more connected to the time vortex and all that sort of stuff, so I think he might come back. I don't think the Chris North one will.
Question I also thought of after that was, do we need to see either of them again? I mean, I suppose you just put the reason forward as to Krasko being there, but they're sort of self-contained. They weren't by any means the best villains we've ever seen in the history of Who's. Do we need to see them again?
I don't think we... I think, in one hand, with Krasko, maybe, there might be a bit more there, but I think the way what Chris Chibnall's working this season is each episode is self-contained, and you probably won't see them again. There won't be... because we don't know what's going to happen yet, but I think by the end of this season, you will not see... A villain that appears in one episode will not end up in another episode. That's my feeling from the way he's said in the past, what he doesn't like. Well, he did do arc stories with Broadchurch and other things, but I think there's not really an arc going on this year, I don't think. Yeah, there's just one other thing I wanted to mention, okay, though, with Yaz and her mum. Do you think that's the first time they've sort of brought up her sexuality, really?
I think so, the first for any of them, really. Maybe.
Yeah, because her mum keeps, have you got a thing with the doctor, and then she goes on, she says, there's friends, and they go on to Ryan, so I think that's being nicely, subtly done, that whole thing there, I think.
Yeah, I think so. We've had a few different sexualities of companions in the last few years with Bill and the others before her. So, it's nicely, subtly done.
I think it's been nicely done, though, because that's the first time, first time it was brought up, really, and we're sort of episode 4 now.
Yeah, I expect she'll just come along to be a caring mother who wants her daughter to find somebody, whoever that is.
Definitely, definitely. So, anyway, what just move to the scores, and what was your feeling and score about it?
Well, as I said yesterday, Al, after one watch, I was probably hovering around 6.5 to 7. But it really has improved for me on the second watch this afternoon. Many of Chibnall's greatest strengths in this one, coming straight throughout. The characterisation is very good. Editing and direction, I think, has gone up a notch again from Sally Abrahamian. So I will bump it up to an 8, maybe an 8.5, somewhere between 8 and 8.5 for me, Al. Another fine one in this good run of a new series.
Yeah, I would probably give it maybe go to a 9, because I really enjoyed it. I liked the villain, Chris North's character, even though you start to think it's the spiders or the villain from nearly a whole episode. I love that little twist at the end where you do feel really sorry for the Queen Spider and the way Chris North's character goes. I did find Yaz's family slightly annoying. I thought her mum was brilliant, but I thought the dad and the other sister were sort of semi-pointless, and why were they there? So that's slightly annoyed. That's the reason I haven't given it a that's the only reason I haven't given it a 10 really this week, because that did slightly annoy me. I thought, like you, direction, lighting, sound was really cleverly and beautifully done, but the TARDIS looked stunning, and that vortex bit was really beautifully shot. So I think it's a 9 for me this week. Just sort of a few things that annoyed me.
Excellent score again, Al. As we've been asking in the last few episodes, if this was to be Target novelised one day, going to stretch that question out a bit to say, if you could have anybody, even out of those who sadly aren't with us in the world anymore, who wrote Target novels in the past, who would you like to write this book? I was thinking of the past masters of Target writing books, sadly no longer with us. I think Ian Marta could have done a good job with this one. He would have been very visceral, describing the spiders shooting at the end, describing the spiders putting the webs around people, perhaps. I think Ian Marta would have done a very good job at novelising this story. He'd make it very visceral. The whole idea, he could go into backstories of the webs being put around people. He could go into Chris North's character blasting away at the end. He could go into the dynamics of that sort of gun culture.
Yeah, I was going to go with Ian Marta as well, because I think, when he did books, it always made the sort of story more in-depth. It had those sort of great things about him. It would make it, it would seem 100 times bigger really in the book. And I think the Chris North character has lots more to go with. You could have him with all these other hotels around the world and how they've all been infected maybe by the spiders or something. I wouldn't ask him because of the way he deals with all the rubbish and sort of putting hotels on top of sort of cosmic waste and that. So I think that would be good. And I think you could find out more about the spiders, where they're from and that, because we both thought they were going to be either Rachnos or spiders from Planet of Spiders, basically. It would have been a nice thing. Well, I think the way they were done was really good. I don't think he needed that, but I think they could be really well fleshed out. This one could be, it would be good if, maybe one of the, the people from Virgin did it really well, because, maybe the adult content could be added. I think, it's one of these stories where I think will come back as a target if it ever does happen in the future, because there's so much more space. It'd be good to see more about, you know, Yaz's family actually done, you know, why the dad's like that. There might be a reason why he's a home dad, or there might be a reason why Yaz doesn't get on with her sister. There might be more in depth that we plumbed, really.
Yes, and modern-wise, the modern writers, who would you like to see have a go?
I know, I'm just trying to think of a good modern writer. I think maybe Jack Rayner, who did a couple of the Benny books, and I think Mark Gatiss might be a good writer for this, maybe, or even Russell T himself, because, you know, there's bits you could really add to all that sort of side, I think.
Excellent, so hopefully we will see these in the future.
We can hope. We noticed today, well, there's a bit of big Finnish news going around the Twitter sphere and photos. It's of new people announced for the Doctor Who graphic novels, what will be coming audiobooks with bigfinnish.com next March. They are The Star Beast and Chris Thompson, who you might know from our original podcast, who used to do nice little things for us where he would play Patrick Troughton and Peter Capaldi. So we hope he's worked very well and enjoying his time at bigfinnish.com.
And well deserved, yeah.
And very well deserved.
Yeah, there's been a few nasty articles in the last few days, Al, about Doctor Who. Typically from the Daily Mail, saying a lot of people are switching off because it's become too PC. And then,
well, that's not true from the ratings.
And then, there was a Daily Star one overnight saying, you know, Doctor Who viewers get bored with this story of spiders and decide to switch off. It doesn't look that way because it's got quite good figures overnight again, Al. I think better.
It's got 6.5, doesn't it? That's impressive.
6.93, which is up on Rosa overnight from last week, so...
Yeah, I think that needs mentioning.
So they are trying to stir the pot, but that sort of thing does worry me when it gets in the mainstream media, because that can affect the people who are casual watchers aren't major fans. They can start to develop a bad rap for it, but hopefully they can make up their minds for themselves.
I'll give you an example. My mum isn't the biggest Doctor Who fan, and she watched Rosa last week just, you know, because it was on Sunday and loved it. But that's why I think that argument won't stand up, because there's a lot of people who don't watch Doctor Who because now it's on Sunday are staying on BBC because they want to watch the Strictly, you know, thing afterwards, and are really enjoying it.
And we have the final figures from a fortnight ago for episode 2, The Ghost Monument, which are set on exactly 9 million viewers, which is absolutely excellent, taking all the new platforms into account, Al.
That is brilliant. But, you know, that's the sort of things we want, and it shows what people are watching. So these sort of lovely articles that have come out are just rubbish, basically. I would take them with pins of salt, because the ratings are just saying the complete opposite, basically. But, you know, it's basically, you know, we're nearly up to episode 4, we're on episode 5, so halfway next week, unfortunately. I think if that is going to be the standard, then maybe 6-7 for people watch it normally, and then about 8-9 by the time you add the catch up, which is brilliant.
Can I just take a big shout back to the Sylvester McCoy era 30 years ago, because I've just seen that Doctor Who finished above Coronation Street for that week.
Uh-huh.
Only had to wait 30 years. Have that, 1988.
So which one would that have been?
That is The Ghost Monument, Al. It was Strictly Come Dancing, the two editions, Saturday and then Sunday were the top two. Channel 4 had a rare entry into the top 10 with the Great British Bake Off, third, 9.22. 9.22, then a dead set 9 million for Ghost Monument in fourth spot, and Coronation Street had 8 million in fifth.
Yeah, well, they gets good storylines, you know. I bet the BBC don't like that, but, you know, Coronation Street gets much better ratings than EastEnders these days.
Ah, well, you know, but Doctor Who gets much better ratings than Coronation Street. That's what we want to see. Give it a good whipping.
That's what we want to see. We want to see, you know, this happening. I don't think that people who, you know, are like my mum, who don't watch it, and are watching it because they're waiting for Strictly to come on, basically, and they are enjoying it, so I think they probably will stay.
And a major bit of news today, Al, we had the sad news of Derek Sherwin's passing, a huge influence on the change from black and white in 1970 from the Troughton era to the colour era of Spearhead from Space, Al. A very sad loss, a very popular man on the DVD extras, I remember watching and listening enthralled to a lot of his stories.
Yeah, he was always a good sort of person on the commentaries. I think he's on quite a few of the Pertwee, and that sort of change from black and white to colour was a momentous thing for Doctor Who. You know, that you wouldn't have the great sort of, you know, graphics you had without it being in colour. That, you know, and the sort of bits, all the colour bit of, you know, the Doctor Who period, it just added that sort of extra leap, I think, you know, when it was, you know, set in, you know, the unit and all that, and the Pertwee period. And I think, you know, that colour era was, you know, is still, you know, a lot of people's hearts, one of their favourite eras of the whole Pertwee era, I think.
And he, of course, created UNIT, something which survives to this day, both in the TV show and on audio.
Oh, most definitely, most definitely. We're not too sure how it's going to survive on TV, but the actual big finish brains of UNIT is just going from strength to strength because of, you know, having, you know, Gemma Redgrave as, you know, involved with UNIT. And just, you know, I'm surprised Chris Jokinor hasn't done a story yet. I expect he will next season. He invented, you know, Gemma Redgrave's character. So I think UNIT are a major part of Doctor Who, and they will be in new season at some point, I reckon.
Yes, thank you to Derek for all his contributions to Doctor Who, and may he rest in peace.
Oh, most definitely, because, you know, there are lots of bits from that, you know, Pertwee we wouldn't have without him, so, you know, it's a loss, unfortunately.
So, Al, entertainment-wise, what have you been up to lately?
I want to go and see Bohemian Rhapsody, and I want to go and see Halloween. I started listening to today the rather beautiful Tom York project, the guy from Radiohead, who's for the remake of the Dario Argento film Suspiria. I think
This
is out later this year, I think at the arts later this month actually. I think it's out on the 15th of November, and it is very beautiful. It's very introspective. I'm trying to think, I've been watching all this drama started on TV. I've been watching The Great Killing Eve and The Cry, which was a very interesting drama with Gemma Coleman. It was great. And I'm going to, at some point today, watch The Little Drummer Boy, which is the new John le Carré drama.
Aha, uh-huh, yes, the little drummer bandit girl, whatever it's called.
The Little Drummer Boy, I think it's called. You know, the one that has no nudity because the Americans couldn't cope with it.
Oh, dear. Well, I've started to watch Lucifer on Amazon Prime. Now I'm catching up with that one. It's very enjoyable. 4 episodes in.
Oh, yeah. Are you enjoying The Walking Dead?
Yes, I'm back to it, and it was suddenly announced at the end of last week's
episode. Don't spoil it out in case you haven't seen it.
Well, no, it's okay, spoiler, I'll give you 5 seconds. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. The end of last week's episode, it said the next 2 episodes are Andrew Lincoln's last, and he is, of course,
he's been there. Sort of speech and letter, hasn't he, saying why he's left, and I saw that as well.
Yes, he's been there since the start, as I have the first episode I watched back in autumn 2010. So,
that was the reason I used to watch it, mainly for Andrew Lincoln, because he was great, and I sort of got sidetracked to season 3 for some reason, so I need to go back and watch, I think.
It's hard to see. A lot of people have speculated online who is going to become the lead character of the show, because no one is really standing out apart from Jeffrey Dean Morgan as Negan, who has been so evil in the past. It's going to take a hell of an about swing for him to become the hero of the piece.
Yeah, but is it definitely continuing after this season? This is not the final season, then?
Not sure, because they have the Fear the Walking Dead spin-off as well, so I wouldn't be surprised, Al. The ratings are sort of getting to be quite low again, so we shall see.
How many
see.
Seasons is it on now? Is this the 8th, isn't it? Or is this
9. This is the first half of season 9 now.
And it's the first half of season 9, so that's pretty good for America, because most American dramas don't get past 5, well, that knows as old, so it would be 8. They don't normally get past 8, do they? I know now it's like 5.
But, you know, otherwise than that, Al, I went to see 2 trips to the cinema on the weekend, Bohemian Rhapsody. Don't worry about the reviews, folks, just enjoy it. It's 2 hours, 15 minutes, very enjoyable, flies by. Slightly sanitised look at the band, I suppose.
Is that more to do with the members of the band being in control? I know it's taken like 10 years to get this onto the screen, basically.
Yes, it is, Al, you know, and a lovely cameo by Mike Myers of Wayne's World film. If you actually manage to spot him, he does get a Wayne's World reference into one of the lines he speaks in character.
Well, I would definitely go and see it. I was just a bit wondering, Raven, because I heard a really bad review on BBC Radio 4's Front Row, like, mid last week, and it's like, if you're a Queen fan, you'll love it. It's like, I'm a very big Queen fan.
Well, you know, spoilers-wise, it's almost worth the ticket price alone for the last 20 minutes and the recreation of a classic concert they did at one point in the mid-80s. You'll probably be able to guess that one, Al.
And, yeah, definitely. And you reckon that's actually on a good cinema system work better than actually being at Live Aid, you were saying?
Yeah, it's as close as we will get to being at that famous Wembley gig.
Well, yeah, I think that's good. And then you went and see, like, another thing I haven't gone around to see, because I try and avoid the cinema on its half term as well, basically. But you went to see Halloween as well, didn't you?
Yeah, if I wasn't whipped up enough into a frenzy by Bohemian Rhapsody, went to see
it. You were bouncing after that when you sent me a message after that.
Yeah, I had to sort of be pegged back and then go and see Halloween then, you know, which is a bit more of a downer, but a great visceral thrill. One of the better sequels we've seen from Halloween since the original, 40 years old now, of course. So just a thoroughly enjoyable one again. Jamie Lee Curtis, great to see her back as Laurie Strode.
Completely bonkers. There's a brilliant thing he did recently on the Graham Norton Show, which he's brilliant, but he's completely bonkers.
The impronounceable episode of Doctor Who.
Which one is the impronounceable one? Which one is episode 5?
TS something, the something, the TS... The
is this the one that looks like it's like virtual reality?
Quite possibly. It's
the one that... end of this week's, it looked very much like a sort of virtual reality. I think this might also be a little bit of naughty in allowing them to merchandise escape rooms, and actually, you know, there's a Doctor Who escape room coming, so it looked very much like a sort of virtual reality escape room thing.
Saranga, with a silent T?
Yeah.
The Saranga Conundrum.
Yeah, that's a horrible one for us to both try and say next time.
Quite a lot of guest stars from just across the way in Rothlock Studios of Casualty in Holby City. Suzanne Packer and Ben Bailey-Smith. Brett Goldstein.
Holby and Casualty.
A few I haven't heard of or can't immediately place just from their names. Got no pictures up. Brett Goldstein, Lewis Chimimba, David Shields and Jack Shalhoub.
What I can see from the end of the trailer, it looks very much like a virtual reality sort of escape room game, I think, what the sort of Doctor and the team TARDIS get all locked in, I think.
Next time, Doctor Who Target Files, we'll be discussing The Saranga Conundrum, written by Chris Chibnall and directed by Jennifer Parrott. Contact Doctor Who Target Files on Twitter, at DW Target Files handle, search Facebook for our page and leave a message, or rate and review us on iTunes. Thanks for listening.